Excellent. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you again so much. Any other questions at all?
Excuse me, Jill. While Al is here, I wanted to introduce him to Eric, because Eric's our coordinator with the B-City group. And Eric, Al is the beekeeper that I suggested might be someone for you to get in touch with.
That's very good. That's very good. Al, I need all the help and all the knowledge I can acquire as we navigate through this first year as B-City USA. So I'm going to be leaning on you and others that are far more experienced when it comes to helping out our friends, the bees here in Galena.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to help. I work with Lori and Lynn a fair amount already, and I volunteer a lot in Stratford. I've got 24 hives of bees, so I'm pretty, I've been doing that for 50 some years. So I've a little overwhelmed with my time, but I'd love to come and help. Just either email me or go through Lori.
Yeah, very good. I think it was last week there was an organization, an international organization, that came out and said that bees are the most important living things on the planet. Without them, we've got some real problems. So the bees are getting some much-needed recognition right now, so that's a good thing.
That might be a stretch, but I'll take it.
Great. Thanks, Dave, for making that connection there. Perfect. All right. Any other questions at all for our friends at Sunbury Rotary?
We do meet at 7:30 tomorrow morning if anybody wants to come over.
Oh, no, not tomorrow morning. Nope, not tomorrow morning.
Oh, this is the third. Yeah, this is, I'm sorry. This is the off week.
No food this week, Dave.
Well, I brought that up, or I'd have been there.
All right, so when is your next meeting then for everyone?
That'll be 2 weeks, not tomorrow, the week after.
Okay. After on Tuesday morning.
First three Tuesday mornings of the month, we meet at the town hall in Sunbury at 7:30.
Perfect.
Unless there's five Tuesdays, then we do four mornings.
All right.
Tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. at Big Walnut Grill, if anyone would like to join us.
And Denise, what are you doing at Big Walnut Grill?
We have dinner. It's a social meeting, and spouses, family can come.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's right. All right. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. Friends at Rotary, and you always are welcome anytime, and I know you're always doing great things, so feel free to come back and share all your good news with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. You're welcome to stay on, or you're welcome to hop off, whatever's good for you. We have our friends at the Belvoir County Public Health District next. I'd like to introduce Jen Wilson and Adam Howard. So if you all would jump in, feel free. We'd love to have you as guests, especially all that's going on now with COVID, and so I'm sure there's going to be some good questions for you.
Yes, thanks for having us. Jen, and I guess we should have coordinated a little bit. I guess I'll start off and then pass the baton over to you, if that's okay.
That sounds fine.
All right, so here today, I guess, to talk a little bit about what's been going on over the last 12 months, 13 months. A little thing by the name of COVID has been, taking a lot of our time, a lot of our efforts. So, COVID-19, a disease everyone probably is familiar with now, respiratory disease, spread by respiratory droplets, a disease that's killed more than 55 people every hour for the last year. So we're talking about a really serious thing here, and we've been on the defensive. For the first 12 months, we were on the defensive against COVID-19. In December, we got our first doses of vaccine at the health district, and we were able to change the field. We were able to go on offense against this disease. And, there wasn't probably a better feeling throughout this entire response in our staff room when we were able to go on the offensive and start protecting people in a new fashion. Isolations and quarantines are one thing, but actually being able to get folks a vaccine that's going to save lives is a whole nother and an encouraging thing. And that's kind of what we've been working on over the last, it's not even been 2 months, which is kind of crazy to think about. since we got our first shipment of doses, we've given over 7,700 doses to folks out there. We are really only limited right now by the amount of doses that are coming in. So we're set up to scale up really quickly. But the reality is we're getting, 500 doses a week would be a good week. So just the vaccine availability right now just isn't out there. And it's really what's limiting us. It's what's limiting your other providers in the area for getting vaccines out to folks. That's why if you look at our wait list, and it's not good. It stands at 18,000 folks that are waiting to get the vaccine. And as you can imagine, if I get 500 doses a week, getting through 18,000 people is not a quick endeavor. So we're getting them out there as quick as we can. I can tell you that we had a recent clinic for the teachers, the educators, all those folks who work in school buildings, and the state of Ohio provided us a special allocation just for this, so that we could get the folks back into school. And that clinic ran very smooth. If you know anybody who was there, they waited less than 4 minutes for the whole thing. We got through 3,900 people in 14 hours. We're going to do it all again here in a few weeks, and we're going to do it in 11 hours because that's how well it went the first time. So once we get the vaccine, and I tell you that to tell you, we're prepared to give 2,000, 3,000 doses a day. It's just we got to get the vaccine out there. There's some encouraging things going on right now with a third vaccine product, Johnson & Johnson, Janssen, and it's a single-dose vaccine. It is in the FDA's hands for approval right now. I do expect them to approve that, and then I do expect CDC to approve its use as well. So once that happens, it'll mean more vaccine on the market. It'll give us a new product that's a single dose. There are some effectiveness differences in the vaccines. The Pfizer and the Moderna products that are on the market right now are more effective than the Johnson & Johnson product. There's no doubt about that. But the Johnson & Johnson product is a one dose, which definitely has some advantages, too, when you're talking about trying to get folks back for that second dose. So the more tools we can have in the toolbox, the better right now. And we're going to keep, fighting this fight to do everything we can to protect everyone out there. A couple things about the current vaccines that are on the market, I can tell you that the only vaccine that we're getting currently is the Moderna vaccine. It is an mRNA, which is a messenger RNA. It works by teaching your body how to make a protein that is recognized and your body develops an immune response. So while your body's learning to fight it, you will hear folks getting little side effects from the vaccine. And this is a normal part of an immune response. So you might get a fever, you might feel a little bit of fatigue. And this is what we would expect as your body's building that immune response. So it's not a bad thing. It comes and it goes. Within a couple of days, it's going to be gone. But it is building that immune response to protect you when you are exposed to the disease maybe later on. One encouraging thing is after folks get the vaccine right now, they would not have to quarantine. Right now, that time period is 90 days for the CDC. So 90 days after your second dose plus 2 weeks, because it takes about 2 weeks to develop that immune response. So after that time, for 90 days, CDC is saying they would no longer recommend quarantine. I anticipate this to continue to evolve as well, because right now we have to think we don't have that much extended knowledge on how long it protects the person. So as this knowledge continues to come in, the data will continue to be reevaluated. So I do anticipate them continuing to look at this and maybe extending it as we go further and we learn more, so long as the vaccine is still working. So that's what I kind of have for y'all. Pass the baton right now to Jen, but I'm happy to answer any questions at the end here too.
Thanks so much. Jen, would you like to take it away?
Absolutely. Probably the one thing that I would mention with what Adam said, in order to register for the vaccine, that's one thing that a lot of people are confused about. They're, getting overwhelmed. You can go to our website and register. But once they register, they just have to be patient and know that they are on our wait list. And also, if they're having trouble, they can go to Source Point, and they will help them. So if you get anybody that calls and asks you, just guide them to us, and we will help them from there. And I send them to Source Point, and Source Point is able to actually go on and help them register. You have, you know, folks that are maybe not so, you know, savvy on the tech, and they have no idea when they get on the computer. I had to do it for my mom, so I can only imagine what, you know, other folks are experiencing. So that's probably the biggest point there is just, you know, if they have questions about how to even get on the list, send them to us, and we will take it from there.
Thank you, Jen. I have a question that was asked of me, is that if people come from other areas, I know everybody's so desperate to get one, and then, they, you know, somebody hears that, oh, Delaware, you know, somewhere has it, and everybody runs to that location hoping they can sign up and get on there. If you lived in Columbus, for example, or just outside of Southern Delaware County, could you come to Delaware to get that, or do you have to stay within your area that you live, within your zip code, I guess, if you would?
Yeah, so we are not strictly enforcing, you know, where you live. If you're meeting the criteria and you're registering with us, you're going into the wait list, and then we give the link to everyone as we continue to move people through the wait list. Because we know not everyone that works here lives here, and not everyone that lives here works here. So it's hard to say this person should or shouldn't get it based on those factors. So we're not scrutinizing it to that level. Anyone can go ahead and sign up for it. And, you know, honestly, I would encourage folks to sign up in multiple places. It doesn't do any harm to sign up with me, to sign up with CVS, to sign up with Kroger. Go for it. We just want you to get the vaccine as fast as you can, no matter where you get it. That's our biggest concern.
Are there any other questions?
Yes, I had a question either for Adam or Jen. The 1st of February, when 70-plus was eligible, I got an appointment, but not until the end of March. And it's actually one of four total places that I signed up. But as of now, I've gotten my first shot. I actually went to Hardin County to get it, and they scheduled my second shot. So I need to cancel that appointment that I had on the 26th. Is that the proper procedure?
Yeah, so we get this question a lot because we've developed out this process after we've went. And at the beginning, we didn't have a cancellation method in our process. So right now, anyone who wants to cancel with us, all you have to do is call or email us and we'll get it canceled. There is an option on the new form when it comes out where folks have that cancellation option because obviously it's a problem if folks can't cancel. But yeah, we would ask anyone who's gotten it somewhere else to go ahead and cancel with us so we can open up those appointments. And the reason I say that is it's better to go through the person you got the first dose for, because the way the state is distributing it is if you got a first dose through, say, Hardin County, the state is supposed to provide them with enough second doses to follow up with folks. So it helps us keep the numbers straight.
Right. And maybe, in fact, did make the second appointment. So that, but I just wanted to know the details for canceling. So. Thanks.
Anybody in our audience at all? Feel free to unmute, or if you're having trouble with that, wave me down.
I have a question, Jill.
Thank you, Tom.
To either of you guys, what are we seeing as far as the seasonal flu? Do we have any numbers on that? Is that indeed way down this year, or do we know?
It does look like it's down, and, you know, perhaps this isn't surprising that we're doing measures to prevent a respiratory illness, and we're preventing a respiratory illness. So, you know, social distancing, mask wearing, you know, these things aren't just solos to COVID-19. They would help for any kind of respiratory disease, and, in fact, they are. So it is more widespread now. How it exactly compares to last year and this year, we haven't crunched those numbers, so I can't tell you right now. But, yeah, like I said, they're respiratory disease prevention techniques, and they do work. And we actually, you know, looking back at the summertime, we actually saw this in the Southern Hemisphere. It was working like that as well. So we kind of had that idea that, you know, these COVID things might help us with other things as well. And it appears so far that that seems to be holding true.
Thanks, Adam.
That would be great. I know I didn't get my usual crud right before Christmas time. I usually get super sick right then, and I did not, so that's good, and I haven't been so hard. Another question for you. I know Governor DeWine announced the phase one of the Ohio centralized scheduling website and for the vaccinations that's been created, and the Ohio Department of Health is now working with vaccine providers to enroll them in the system. What's the latest on that that you're aware of?
Yeah, so the health districts throughout the state are currently working with the Ohio Department of Health on this. Obviously, we don't want to implement something that loses all the folks that are pre-registered. 18,000 people that I'm looking at right now just can't disappear. So we're working with them to see what the solution is to merge all of our programs, because you've got 113 health districts out there, you've got Rite Aid, you've got CVS, so it's a lot of different aspects to bring together. Overall, trying to make it simpler to the consumer, to the patient, is really what we all want. We're just trying to find a way that gets there, that doesn't forget about anybody or let anybody slip through the cracks, and also meets all the demand. So actively, to get back to the question, we're actively working with the State Department of Health on trying to see what the realization of this would look like.
Yeah, it sounds like this one is kind of built from scratch versus using kind of what the feds rolled out. Is that correct?
Yeah, Ohio did opt out of the federal, so this would be a state-level system.
Yeah, okay. I also wondered, the time frame for those 65 and younger is coming up, isn't it?
So, I don't know. we don't get that much advance notice on what the next tier is going to be. So we usually find out what the next tier is maybe an hour before everybody else. So I don't, I can't really tell you with any certainty, because we're not really following the CDC schedule either. So I can't look at that and say this is a good predictor in this case. So I'm sorry, I don't have that answer.
No, that's okay. All right. No, we're all learning as we go, right? So Jen, I'm sorry, you popped up on my screen. Did you have some additional information?
I just kind of wanted to say, other than the vaccines, which I know that's on everybody's mind right now, as far as my area in the EH group, we are trying to help things, the normal activities and the normal life continue to happen as long as we're following the director's orders and the restart orders. So we are thinking about Easter. We're thinking about prom. We're thinking about graduation. We even had garage sales pop up today, and I was like, can we at least let the snow melt before we start worrying about garage sales? But that is what we are doing. So, like I said, what is normal life and normal activities? We're trying to help that happen, but at the same time, keep the director's orders in mind and just try to, keep the cases down. Right now they're going down, which is a positive thing. We want to keep it that way. So that is what we are doing. So we are working with our schools and, the sports leagues and all those folks to try to help things be normal as long as we're following the wear your mask and social distance and all that good stuff.
Great. Well, I know you guys are working 24/7. I've got some friends at the health department, and just bow down to you guys because the amount of time and hours and effort that you've put into this has been insurmountable. So thank you.
Yeah, this is really another question for either Adam or Jen. And my internet is jumping in and out, so forgive me if you mentioned this or talked about it at all. But once the vaccine has been administered, I know it's not necessarily green light for business as usual. I think it still requires wisdom in how you engage in the public and wearing the mask and all that. But my question is, what's the efficacy date, time frame, once the shots have been, administered, we're talking 6 months, 8 months, a year, like what's that time frame? That may be a difficult question to answer. We don't know. But I don't know what's been discussed and what's the narrative around that. Can you kind of educate us a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So right now, and we have to think about this in the terms of how long has this been out. So the trial participants, they enrolled last fall. So, really, we're looking last fall to today isn't that long to really know what is all going on. So right now, we know that about 2 weeks is how long after that second dose it takes to build that immune response. So So after that 2 weeks, then your body has those cells in there, those memories that are ready to fight. So we also are under the belief that that at least lasts for 90 days. Okay? So that's how far we're willing to go out and say that protects you enough to say that you're not quarantined, at least for 90 days right now. We don't know how much further that goes beyond. When we look at similar viruses, you know, this could last a long time, or it could be something that you need a booster years from now on. Less is showing that it could be a yearly thing. That could be possible. I don't know yet. So the answer is I don't know exactly how long it's going to go out because our trial participants that originally took this vaccine only got it in, gosh, it was probably like August that they got the vaccine. So really we only have, you know, 6 months of data to know how long it's been effective in them. So those folks are the companies were continuing to follow up with those folks to try and continue to monitor to see how long that effective dose there worked. So I don't have the exact, but I can tell you at least 90 days is what we're looking at right now.
Thank you. All right. Again, I'd like to open it up to anybody in our audience. All right. Well, great. Thank you so much. Again, Adam Howard, what are you here? The title of Director of Preventive Health. And so you've got a lot going on with a lot of knowledge. And thank you so much for being so articulate and answering our questions tonight. We really appreciate that greatly. So if anybody does have any other questions, we'll move on to some reports. Thank you, Adam and Jen. Have a great night.
You too.
Say hi to Sheila for us.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, Jeff. If you'd like to move into your report.
Okay. I'll start out with where we were talking about Arrowhead Lake Estates development last month. We had an ordinance 2020-16. We've done a couple readings on that one. It has to do with releasing their construction performance bonds. However, we still have not seen resolution about that drainage issue with respect to the adjacent property owner. And so when we get to that part of our agenda tonight, it looks like we'll need to table that third reading of that ordinance 2020-16 to the March meeting. Another matter related to Pulte, if you remember, was the cost of the Zor Street extension from the Heathermere subdivision to Fescue Street. And to date, as far as I know, we have not received any further information from Pulte regarding what they expect us to pay. So that's still hanging out there, and we have no other information as far as I know. Going down there, you'll see I've started listing now a new development called Galena Crossing, and that's the subject of the annexation petition to the county that's going through that process right now. And so Planning and Zoning Commission did their part, and it looks like currently we're foreseeing that the Village Council will start its public hearing for this Galena Crossing development at its next meeting, which is March 22nd. I'm going to come back to the sewer wastewater plant topic. I'm going to save that for the end of my report. Going into the streets, we're still awaiting Ohio Public Works Commission's decision regarding our funding application for the Walnut Street culvert replacement. I wanted to make sure we all recognize that Ted and Cody have still been quite busy. They finally got relief today, but with that snow and ice control, we had so many different winter weather events over the last few weeks, including on weekends and holidays. And so now they're just out trying to get rid of some of that compacted ice that's still out there. I wanted to point out that our maintenance shop, the building is in bad condition, as I pointed out in my annual report, but the 50-year-old heater or furnace that's in the maintenance part of that building, it's failed, and so we're seeking replacement quotes right now, but it's going to be at least $3,000, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to not have to do that right away. We could do it probably later in the year. I think the guys have been able to survive this frigid winter weather that we've been having enough that they can make it to the warmer spring weather. But nonetheless, we'll have to figure on some dollar amount to budget for that, the cost of that project. The sewer rate study, our computer model has been updated with the village's 2020 financial data, so we have a year's worth of actual cost data that we were able to plug into that model. So the model is ready for whenever the finance committee is going to start delving into this. The council has had two readings of Ordinance 2020-10, which is to establish the village's right-of-way permit program for utility companies. And we just received Columbia Gas's comments. We've been waiting for that for quite a while. We didn't get those comments soon enough to be able to get them addressed in time for tonight. So I recommend when we get to that part of our agenda that we should table the third reading of Ordinance 2020-10 to the March 22nd meeting. The Columbia Gas Pipeline installation project is still coming. I speak to the representatives from Columbia Gas about each week, and so they're going to be back soon, and I've been trying to provide whatever information I can about our underground sewer system so that hopefully I can avert them having to do open excavation and do as much as they can by directional boring. So I'm going to circle back around here to talk about the sewer wastewater plant. So Ken and Tom Marshall and I have been working and coordinating with Workman Industrial. That's our construction contractor. And we believe we're very close to concluding the contract. And assuming we get the paperwork back from Workman that we're waiting for, we have to do some final things with the Ohio Water Development Authority, but hopefully at the March meeting I'll be able to report that it's a done deal and that contract is closed. The other thing I wanted to talk about is that for a long time now I've been reporting about the need to straighten out the chemical feed system at the wastewater plants. And also then we were talking about installing a ventilation system for the screen room. And our consultant, Tom Marshall, has been working on those initiatives. And so I've asked Tom to be on hand tonight for the council to learn about these projects. And I believe we can fit these into the budget and get them over with this year. But Tom is on the call tonight, and whether you want to take time now and have him tell you about these projects or wait till a different part of the meeting is up to you.
Council, do you have a preference?
I would say since he's introduced the topic, now would be the time.
Okay, great. All right, do you have a particular question you'd like to start out with, Tom?
Well, go ahead, Tom, and explain what you're seeing on these projects and so forth.
Okay. Well, hello, Mayor and Council. It's a pleasure to be here in this virtual environment. You all look well. And I have a little PowerPoint. I thought I would just show just a couple slides, take about 5 minutes. If the council, mayor, if you wish, I can throw that up really quick. I could share a screen if that suits you.
I think it sounds great.
Okay. Do this here. Post disabled participant screen share.
Yep. Yeah. I'm just going to share it with you.
Okay. Whoa. Well, I'm viewing the view options. Okay, I'll try it again. Share screen. It still says disabled.
Okay, try now.
Okay. There it is. Great.
Okay.
Thank
great.
You.
Thanks.
Okay, I don't know if you can all see that or not.
Sure can.
Okay, so just a quick status report, and nothing fancy here. First of all, I thought I'd just, for the new members of council, you all probably know this, but I thought it's helpful to review the project history. In 2008, the village identified the need for a new wastewater treatment plant. There was a Pogemeyer report. We refer to that as the Pogemeyer report. The existing plant was out of capacity. It was also at the end of its useful life. In 2009, the village obtained NPDES permits for a new wastewater treatment plant from the Ohio EPA. So this was quite an undertaking. It was involved a lot of work, a lot of engineering work, and the NPDES permit stands for National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit. So that's what we need to operate our wastewater treatment plant. So we got a new permit for a new plant. In 2010, Pogemeyer ran into some design issues and cost overruns, and the project was postponed. It turned out to be a good time to postpone the project because there was a recession and it was not, the need, you know, it was just a good time to postpone the project. But there were several issues. From 2011 to 2015, the village was plagued with capacity problems and sewer overflows and NPDES violations. Every time it rained, basically, the plant would overflow. The old plant was at the end of its useful life and then some. And in 2015, the Ohio EPA issued a building moratorium. They said, look, you can't add anything else to this plant, until you do a capacity upgrade. So in 2016, the village hired IBI to begin redesign on the new wastewater treatment plant. Pogemeyer had done some work, but, it needed to be revisited. In 2017, there were IBI design issues, some extreme cost overruns. The project was really in peril. I don't know, Ken, what we're allowed to say, but there was a lawsuit, and the village got a settlement from IBI because of that issue. So in 2018, the village was kind of stuck because there were there was a need for a new plant, dire need for a new plant, but yet the village was having trouble being able to build that plant for the budget that it had. So they hired me, and what we did, I was very impressed with the village council administration decided to do a design-build approach. And what that did is that allowed the village to get a new plant built very, very quickly at a very low cost. A year later, we have a state-of-the-art new wastewater treatment plant online. It was on time, ahead of time, actually, ahead of schedule and under budget. The thing is that the plant, we wanted to try to get it done quickly and try to get it done under budget. The IBI plans, we were looking at about a $10 million, at least a $10 million plant, and it was hard to figure out how to get it under that, but the design build helped us a lot. And so we ended up with under $5 million with a plant that's worth much more than that. So it really, the village did very well on the project. The current status of the plant is there are some finishing touches in progress. One of the things with design build is there were some issues that we didn't really fully develop, and we wanted to wait and see how things went before we finished certain aspects, and I'll talk about those in a minute. But there was additional work completed in 2020. There was a new parking lot, which you see added doubled the capacity of parking for the ball field. A new river outfall repurposed the existing plant, so the existing plant was repurposed into a flood storage and equalization basin. I should say the plant's running extremely well. I get the lab results every day, and it's the cleanest water in the state of Ohio coming out of our plant. Very, very good, excellent running plant. The Miller Farms forced main interface was done. While we had everything dug up, we thought it was a good time to go ahead and make provisions for that tie-in, and we installed an overhead crane. So 2021, expect to have the project final completion. WIS stands for Workman Industrial Services. They were our design-build contractor. We are in the process of closing out that contract. There were some issues that we did a few things. I don't want to say temporary, but they kind of were temporary. One of them was the chem feed system. We just, in an effort to save time and money, we didn't spend a lot of effort on the chemical feed system, and we have 55-gallon drums there, and it just we need to get a more permanent solution. And so what Workman did is they gave us we basically got a $45,000 credit. It's the first project I ever worked on that's come in under budget, by the way. We have a $45,000 credit that now the village can use to kind of take our time and get this right with a chemical feed system. I'll talk about that in a minute. The Ohio Water Development Authority, as Jeff said, will work on that final payout. And there are three kind of ongoing projects, chemical feed system, alum mixing, and screen room ventilation. And then finally, the development and implementation of a maintenance management plan. So to wrap up here, the chemical feed system enhancements, what we want to do is replace the 55-gallon drums with permanent 150-gallon bulk feed tanks for the sodium hypochlorite and citric acid chemicals. Those are used to clean our membranes. You have the village owns a state-of-the-art membrane. It's kind of like reverse osmosis. And these membranes need cleaned every week, and these two chemicals are used to clean those membranes. And so we're putting in a very nice system. Now that we see how everything's working out, we're at a point where we can use that $45,000 credit and get a permanent chemical feed system. It's currently in progress, this chemical feed system. We have all the design complete, and we have a company called Wunderlich Malik who is providing the equipment and the engineering. And then we have Zimmerman, who is doing the construction, and Spring Electric doing the electrical work. The expected cost is $40,000. I think it will come in well under that. But we have received a $25,000 credit from Workman Industrial Services, and we're receiving a $20,000 credit from Suez, who is the manufacturer of the pump equipment for the chemical feed system. So that's the chemical feed system. We're excited about getting that done. It's kind of complicated, and it's taken a while to get everything figured out. But I'm confident that we are on the right track, and I believe that the village administrator has issued the purchase orders for the new equipment that's coming in. The second project is the alum mixing. Alum is aluminum sulfate. We weren't sure how this was going to work out when we first built the plant, and we did a kind of a pilot project. We need to add this to meet our NPDES permit, and we want to install a mixing system in our mixed liquor. That's a funny name for the biological material that we use to treat the wastewater. We want to get a permanent dosing system in. The Ohio EPA has mandated phosphorus removal requirements from our effluent, so we're required to remove phosphorus to a very, very low degree. And we didn't know whether we were going to use aluminum sulfate or ferric chloride. It turns out the aluminum sulfate is somewhat problematic. So we have a temporary system installed right now. We want to get that permanent. So it's currently we're in design. We're actually pilot testing mixing systems. If you want to go to the plant and look at it, we have a mixer we're testing right now. But we're well on our way to getting this project figured out, and we're going to be installing a mixing system and an alum dosing station. That's the expected cost of $25,000. Again, these are kind of wrap-up things that we need to finish. Finally, the screen room ventilation. We weren't sure what that room was going to be like, and we decided to hold off on installing ventilation until we could operate it for a while and see what the environment was like. We're going to be adding continuous ventilation systems to remove hydrogen sulfide that will help prevent corrosion on the equipment. And then we're going to add a large ventilation system to evacuate the room whenever the operator enters. That'll be a safer environment. It's a pretty toxic environment, more than we thought in that room. So we have that all figured out, and the expected cost on that is between $10,000 and $15,000. So that's what I've been trying to work on, getting the plant contract closed out, getting the plant up and running. I think it's been a real success. You know, COVID has thrown everything, thrown a wrench in the works, so I'm trying to get things done, but I think we're on our way. The village got a very good plant at an excellent price. Since we did design build and we kind of broke our neck to get the thing finished in time, and we did come in under budget, but there are some things around the edges we're trying to finish up, and these three things represent that. Finally, I'm going to be developing a maintenance management plan. I've kind of started on that, but after we get these three projects finished, we're going to be inventorying all the new equipment. The village has $5 million invested in that plant. We want to make sure we protect that investment. So I want to identify and perform all manufacturer recommended services, develop preventive maintenance plans to preserve the village's investment, and develop a life cycle maintenance approach. So with that, I can take questions. That's our report.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tom. I have to really stress to anybody, when you get a chance, please, and Tom's in town, or maybe we can have kind of a group event here where we go to and have Tom explain all of this and walk you through the plan. It is actually really fascinating. And if there's anybody that makes all the lingo easy, it's you. So thank you.
Thank you. Jill, actually, that's exactly what I put on my list. I've been waiting on the walkthrough, so I know COVID hit and we are limited, but maybe we could schedule a small group. Very interesting.
I'm available. I'm in town, and anytime I'd be happy to go through individually or as a group. You can get a hold of me through Jeff. I'd be happy, Kathy, to take you and/or others through the plant. It's an amazing thing. I mean, that plant. I've worked on literally hundreds of wastewater plants, and this is by far the nicest. It sounds kind of weird because it's a wastewater plant, but it's really a really nice plant. The effluent coming out of it is so clean, and we can really be proud of that. You know, we're discharging into the creek and into the reservoir is very, very good water. We're doing an excellent job protecting the environment, and the cost is turning out to be low operationally as well. You know, we have all the energy saving, variable frequency drives and so forth. So it's really, this plant, I think that I would like to submit it for an award because there are national awards given out for innovative plants and nice plants like ours. And so I'd kind of like to do that. I really think we would win. It's an award-winning plant, so it's worth taking a look at.
Can I throw out the date of Saturday, March 13th, say 11 a.m.? Do you know if you're in town? And then anyone on council who would like to join? You can check that later and get back with us. That's fine.
Okay. I have to go to Aruba. I think I'll be back there.
Sorry.
Have to. I have to go to Aruba.
You got to do that, no doubt.
You have to do that.
The exciting thing is the government is paying me to come there. I'm going to be working on their desalinization plant.
Very nice.
You're always doing something very charitable. Well, I know that we'd love to even have an open house. As soon as we get to the plant where you feel comfortable, opening those doors to the public, I think it would be really nice to have a day of kind of celebrating that.
Yeah, and check your calendar for Saturday availability, and we can ask amongst council who would like to be there.
Saturday, March 13th, or?
Well, or thereafter.
Okay.
I'm tied up before that, so.
I don't have a question for Tom, but I do have a comment to make. Probably the longest standing council member, there were times after two attempts that I thought we were not going to have a new sewer plant. And if you don't realize it, the reason that we have what we have is because of Tom Marshall. And we owe him a huge debt of gratitude and thanks for the work that he's done. As Kathy indicated, he can make very complicated things sound understandable, and that's why it would be good to have him give us a tour, because I think we would all have a better understanding and appreciation for what he's done.
That's very kind, Councilman. We've been through a lot with this wastewater treatment plant. The village, it was an unfortunate thing. It just didn't seem like, building a wastewater plant is a hard thing to do. And after two engineering consulting firms taking their best shot at it, not being able to come through and figure out how to get a plant under budget, I want to just throw it back at council at the time agreeing to do a design build. That was a bold move. And, that's what made it happen, Councilman. Back at you there. It's been a pleasure to work with the village. You guys are excellent visionaries and innovative. And that's why I really think this plant will win an award, because it's a rare thing to be able to pull off a project like this. So, I think we can all be very happy with it. I've never worked on a treatment plant. I've worked on a bunch of these. And I've had lots of neighbors complain to me, and I told the mayor this. I did get a complaint from the neighbor across the street, and he came over, and he said, because of this plant, I had to rearrange my living room. And I thought, well, that's not much of a complaint. And I kind of puzzled of what's wrong, why do you have to arrange this living room? And he said, I had to move everything around so I could get a better view of that water wheel at night. I love the way the beautiful water wheel looks, and so I had to rearrange my living room. So it's neat to have a plant that actually people like to look at. Usually these things are eyesores. So yeah, it worked out pretty well. But I'm really excited to finish this. Get some of these things finished. They're complicated. We knew that we were going to run into problems with a couple of these things. And so we thought we'd wait and see how things would shake out, like the ventilation room and so forth, and the alum feed is working very well. It's removing phosphorus very well. So we're in a position now where we can finalize these things. And I thought it was amazing that we actually got a credit to get that done. So I think it'll be pretty much a wash and on the budget needs for that thing.
I thought it was really interesting, Tom, when we walked through and, you explained everything to me, and then we walked right out to the water, out to the creek area, and to see it coming out and see how clear it was coming out. I mean, you almost feel like you could just drink it right from there, like crystal. So thank you. Any other questions at all?
I have a quick question. It sounds like it's accommodating everything very well at this current time. But with the new developments that are proposed, how well will the current system accommodate the extra influence of households? Are all those households going to be put into the wastewater treatment plant? I mean, or what is the maximum household capacity that the new system could work with? And has the rate of growth been taken into account with the new system?
Okay, great, great question, Councilman. Did a quick calculation. The former plant had a capacity of 70,000 gallons per day, and this plant has a capacity of 250,000 gallons per day. And the other plant we'd have peaking problems, so whenever it would rain, the other plant would be overwhelmed. And that's why the EPA issued a moratorium. They said, nothing else can come into this plant. You need to build a new plant. So this current plant can take an instantaneous peak of 2 million gallons per day of flow. And we haven't even come close to seeing that yet. So we can, it looks like we have about 500 equivalent dwelling units of capacity, in the plant. The way to figure that out, by the way, is you figure 150 gallons per capita per day, and then you figure your average household is 2.2 people per household. So, 150 times 2.2 is about how many gallons you need to design for. And that's 330. So we've used to figure 350 gallons per household. So if you do the math, you take we have about 200,000 gallons of capacity left. So you take that and do the division. Of course, there's some peaking factors. I'm oversimplifying the calculation, but suffice to say, there's plenty of capacity at this plant. The good news is that we designed the plant to be able to expand. So the plant is ready. Everything is there to expand to 500,000 gallons per day. So what we did is we put the footprint there, all the tankage, everything is designed for 500,000 gallons. All we need to do when that time comes, it'll be easy to pull that trigger. All we have to do is drop in an inflow pump, put in two blowers, and put in a new membrane skid, and all the piping is all ready to do that and everything. So we have thought well into the future. What I like about this plant is it's not too much. I've been in municipalities before that have taken off too big of a bite, and they're sitting there with all that capacity, and they're just sitting on it. This plant is just right because the 250 allows for just ample degrees of freedom of growth, however it's needed. It allows for that, but it also allows for a very quick expansion up to 500,000 gallons per day. So we really think that we got this one right. When you look at it, it's hard to predict this stuff, right, because you don't know what the growth rate is. So when you get to 80% capacity of this plant, that would be the time then to start the planning process for that upgrade to 500,000 gallons per day. Does that make sense?
So what percentage would you put us at now, Tom?
We're pretty low, Kathy. I think that was that Kathy? So if you take 50 divided by 250, right, we're 20% capacity.
Okay. Just the mindset of we had Miller Farm, we've got, Arrowhead going, we get Black Hawk going, we might be up 1,000 houses before you know it.
We're ready. Absolutely ready for that. And what's neat is that Miller Farm, I was really happy we did this. I wanted to do this while we were building the plant. So we put in a force main. We sized all of Miller Farms and figured out exactly what the force mains would need to be coming into the plant. And we have all that installed already, and it's running out, and there are two valves at the back of the plant, so we don't have to tear anything up. I hate building a new facility and then 2 years later tear it all up. So we thought about that ahead of time. It didn't cost us much to do that. By the way, I would recommend it to recoup the cost of that as force main provision from the people out there that will be benefiting from it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It was about $50,000.
How much?
$50,000.
$50,000. Yeah, we'll recoup that. Yeah, thank you.
What I've done in the past with this recoupment is you do your capacity fee calculation, which is the same for any new connection. but there are certain areas of your service area that then may have additional fees based on the infrastructure that it took to run service to those areas. So it's really not a very hard calculation. You basically create zones, so you have your base capacity fee, which is easy to calculate. You basically take the cost of your plant, divide it by the gallons that the plant will take, and then times it by the amount of gallons that that the people will be using. So that's a pretty easy calculation. And then you put your collection system infrastructure, kind of a surcharge on top of that. And it'll be a good deal. You know, we've got such a good deal on our plant. I think that Galena will be very competitive on our connection fees, on our capacity fees.
Mm-hmm. Great. Tom, that's just, it's been very, very informative. Thank you so much. And I think it's really nice to kind of go over that history, and that PowerPoint walkthrough was very helpful, I think, for a lot of the new folks on board as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. So I wanted Tom to be here tonight to explain that, because in our temporary budget that we've had so far this year, we don't have enough in some of the line items, enough allocated for some of those specific projects that he described. And so as we move forward on finalizing the 2021 budget, I thought it would be good for everyone to hear directly from Tom what's needed.
And Jeff, I know you and I spoke about this. It's probably a good idea to have a finance meeting one more time regarding the budget.
And Jeff, can those expenses come out of the water treatment funds?
Yes. The and whenever we have our finance committee meeting to go over the final numbers for the budget, we can look at that. But the 5201 part of our budget, that's the wastewater, yes, there's money in there in different lines. We just need to bring those numbers in line for the specific projects that Tom spoke about.
And, Mayor, I want to add that, council members, that some of you may have seen some correspondence today about the tax bill we have for this new plant. The water wheel looks so good, the county decided to tax it. And, our initial wastewater treatment plant is an exempt property, of course, because it's a municipal facility. Because this expansion was made, they decided that they were going ahead and tax it. I talked to Suzanne sent me the bills today. I talked to both the county auditor and county treasurer's office today. They're going to suspend that, and we are going to have to file a modified application for exemption to entail the expansion that Dr. Marshall just described. So that's kind of a wild card that showed up in the mail today. I forget how much the bill was, but we have plenty of time to pay it. It's due Monday. I think we have that handled. I'll check on it again. But that'll be a further application for, to make the property exempt. And Suzanne,
that's the one that was $114,000? Is that one?
Could be. I know I had two bills that Suzanne sent over. Suzanne?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember how much the bill was?
I don't, but I think it was the $114,000, and on the bill it says exempt, so mm-hmm. We were all kind of like, why are we getting charged for this? Mm-hmm. But it says exempt on there.
Yeah.
Ken, thank you, took care of it, and so I guess your office will file for the modified.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and do that and make sure we'll follow up to make sure that it doesn't, that the taxes don't come due as advertised. The other thing we're doing is just a general A to Z review of property that the village owns to make sure that it's all exempt. There is a parcel or two that I found today that looks like it's still taxable, so we'll get that all cleaned up and we should be in good shape here in a couple of months.
Great, because it's $114,695. And 76 cents. So There's not small dollars there.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I don't think that's our bill. That's in somebody else's name. I don't have the file with me. But in any event, as I said, we've talked to the treasurer about that, and we'll follow up on it.
Yeah. And thank you for looking to all the other properties that we have as well and trying to get that whole system cleaned up as well. Jeff, anything further on your report?
That is all.
I had a question going back. I didn't want to interrupt, and then we moved on and on. So this might be far-fetched, but Jeff, is there any way to tie the 2026 team, where they want that performance bond, Arrowhead Lake, is there any way to tie that to not releasing it until we work out the Zor, Heathermere dollar amounts? Or is that like apples and oranges?
Well, Ken can correct me if I'm wrong, but the decision about whether to pass Ordinance 2020-16 is up to the Village Council, and you could do it for whatever reason you want.
But does the Heathermere Zor fall under that category?
There are some things, Kathy, that are best discussed in executive session with your lawyer, and this might be one of them. Hopefully, we don't have to do that. Hopefully, this all rectifies itself by our next council meeting, and it all becomes a moot point. If not, I suspect we'll be having that discussion.
That's great. We'll move forward as necessary.
Sorry, Kevin. This is for Jeff. Jeff, I know you said you haven't heard back from Polta yet. So is there any, a time frame? What's the last communication from them? So just thinking how no one likes surprises, I just want to know if we have an expectation from them on when we can get an answer on the cost.
No, we threw the problem back into their lap, and so we'll sit on our money till they are ready to come back to us.
Okay.
Jeff, what was the timing on the OPWC grant?
For the culvert?
Yeah.
generally, I believe, historically, that it's around March when OPWC releases their decision.
Okay. So it got a little time to wait anyway.
Yes.
I made this comment last month, and I just want to reiterate it, that how important the post office is. I think there's more traffic at the post office than any other one spot in the village. So I know Ted and Cody have been kept busy, but I am concerned that the post office seems to be not high enough on the priority list when they're out doing their work, and that maybe you could encourage them to go through there first rather than later in their priority list.
Okay, I'll talk to them about that.
Well, I know, sure. You know, there's been so much when it comes to snow removal, so don't take it wrong. But I did stop there today to drop off some mail on the way to the village, and my car had to really climb over a high mound of snow that was like right in front of where the mail slot is. So, but there's been plenty of work for everybody, so don't take that wrong.
I want to also add, I think the guys are doing a great job. I think to the point that I saw them out at 3 a.m. one morning. I saw them out, my kids are concerned that they're doing too good a job so they don't get snow days, that kinds of things. They said, slow down, guys, the roads are clear. So I had a chance to talk to Ted, didn't get a chance to talk to Cody, But I just want to make sure that the guys know that we do appreciate the work that they're doing, and they're doing it in under hard conditions. But if it's a matter of just triage and saying, hey, let's make sure if that area around the post office needs to be slightly higher up the list, so our folks that are trying to get to that box, that seems like that would be an easy shift. But again, thanks for all the good work.
And that's funny you say that, Eric, because I heard the 11, 12-year-old kids cross the street. They were sled riding. They're like, stay away, salt trucks.
Get out. Oh, yeah, they can't stand these salt trucks. Just keep them. Go somewhere else. Go around the post office twice, but don't do the road. But I think they have a misunderstanding of exactly what's going on. But I do want to say thanks to the guys that are doing it.
Well, I'll sure pass that on. Yeah, they get, and this isn't just in Galena, it's been other places I've been, snowplow drivers get it from both directions. So you have one neighbor comes out and says, attaboy, and then the next neighbor comes out and complains because it's not close enough to the curb that they're clearing the snow. It's you can't seem to please everybody all the time, but they're taking it in stride. So I'll report to them about the post office.
Yeah.
And I'd just like to say I've been there when Cody was trying to clear at the post office, and it was during the day. And people kept parking on the side, so
right.
He couldn't get in there to clear it. So I wanted to put that out there.
So, yeah. Well, that's why I was actually suggesting maybe if you put it higher on the priority than before the traffic gets there. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And, Jeff, real quick, is there on your calendar for trash for Rocky 2021?
I believe they have just recently updated their website. And so anybody can go to the Rumpke website and plug in our zip code and see the days of trash collection and recycling. Our website also has a page with the schedule on it. It still has the 2020 schedule.
Right.
I've been waiting for Rumpke to update their 2021 schedule. There are a couple of days that get shifted because of holidays and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that'll get updated, but in the meantime, if somebody has a question, they can always go to the Rumpke website and get it directly.
Okay, great. Thank you. I've been looking for that. Will they be doing a mailing out to the residents?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Do they normally?
I don't know. So especially since it's their first year of a contract with them. I'm not real sure.
I have gotten emails from them in the past.
Okay.
So maybe we need to make sure they've got email addresses for residents.
Right. Okay. All right. Great. I also just wanted to put out there for finance. You guys are getting a lot on your plate this time. Jeff and I really had a long conversation about the maintenance building, and I know that that is something that has been out in the universe for many years. And, you know, it always just comes down to money and all of that. But these poor guys are, they're just going to be in a dirt hole eventually. You know, we're going to start spending more on trying to refurb this building than it would cost to get a new building. And so I just want to start those conversations, maybe with some help with the finance team and with Suzanne, just to see what some options are, especially with interest rates so low. Maybe we can work it into some type of a development agreement. I don't even know what the answers are, kind of spitballing here. But it is something that we really need to make a priority. Whether we start budgeting for this next year, you know, 2022. But I just, that is something that I'd love to see, you know, happen for these guys. Because especially as we grow as a village, they're certainly not going to be able to continue to work out of that building. So, you know, really something that we have to start being somewhat proactive on.
Has there been any more conversation about getting the value of that building behind Summer Thurman's and deciding, do we sell that? Use that as a down payment? Do we use that building? Do we?
Right.
No, it's a great idea. Like, expand, it's pretty small, but
yeah, because really, what we need on that is to get an appraiser. We need to be able to
allocate money to get the appraiser for that building, because on the obvious side it's $6,400, but that was done years ago. So it's not going to be worth a lot because it's essentially just the building. But, hey, it's better than nothing, right? And we're not really utilizing it for a whole lot. We can move those things into something else. And there's a lot of
building. Is a building just sitting there basically being wasted, but potentially we could get some dollars for that, use it for a down payment, or we take another look at it and say, well, why aren't we using it? Let's use it in this fashion, just some thoughts.
Right.
It's not standing vacant, Kathy. There are things in there that are being stored. So.
Oh, I agree, but I've heard with what's being stored in there, it's just thrown around, and it acts. Just the value of the building is not worth what's being stored in it.
I think we can find. I think a lot of it can be thrown away, and a lot of it that needs to be housed. I mean, like for example, the tree lights are in there. So I mean, you know, we've got to find a house for those. There's a lot of lights, so you know, it's definitely holding some value. But if we can get something else, at least even temporary, while we build something else, would be really good. So,
and that's a
general thought. I just wanted to put it back out in the universe to start that conversation again, because I know that there's a lot around that.
Well, and I think that's some prime land as well.
Yep. And I know I have a buyer.
I'll open the ice cream shop, or I'll do something, right?
Yeah. I know I have a buyer. I got a couple buyers. I know. They've already approached me, so we got
But you're saying we have to start with an appraisal, but we have to determine the cost of that and get that approved.
Right. Right. So, Ken, would that be something that you would take forward, or Jeff? I don't know.
Yeah, we can go ahead and, we need an appraisal first before you can declare the property to be excess, not necessary for municipal needs, and then go about selling it. So, yeah, we may as well go ahead and, I can get an estimate of what we need for a fee. A fee appraiser, I think, is going to be within Jeff's authority to spend, so... We'll find someone to give us a value on it, and then basically the procedure is for council to declare the property as excess property and put it on the market, however you so choose, and sell it, typically by auction. So
we do a bid, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll get with Jeff, and we'll carry that through.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Jeff, anything else?
No, I'm all done.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. All right, well, I will touch on my report here. Obviously, all the events are at a low grade right now due to COVID, but our festivals are holding on. So we are still planning on seeing those through the summer, and hopefully that will be the case. I have not heard any more regarding the event to commemorate Galena's zip code, the 43021, on April 30th. I know I passed some of that information over to our events team, so I don't know if you have followed up with a particular person who is interested in that or not, and I'm not sure, you know, if she's still interested in doing that. I just thought I would mention it. Also, the mayor's salary as of 2021 by January is $585.92. Just a little bit about the master plan and zoning code review. The planning and zoning draft is in the public hearing phase, and the first hearing took place on February 17th. There were a few items brought up by a resident that Ken will review and relay to the commission. The public hearing was left open until the next meeting on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, to receive further public input. One thing I would just love to mention with this, please tell your friends, please ask your friends to look at this on our website. Contact us. We want to get as much information and as much feedback on this, on the draft as possible, because this was the really big thing that people really wanted to see, as we moved into this new year with some title restrictions and things. So we have, as a Planning and Zoning Commission, have worked entirely on this document, and so we are so open to additional eyes, and I know all of council has it, so you can start the review on that, but right now for planning and zoning, we're in our public hearing phase, and we just really want public input, so please get the word out there to have people look at this document. The document will be available for public requests, which we encourage. Council also received the draft to start reviewing, so there may be additional changes in that draft based on what we hear from some of our residents. I know Jeff kind of touched on development. The Galena Crossing was approved by PNZ at the February 17th meeting and recommended council for approval, so you'll be seeing that. The landowner and architect were present at our February PNZ meeting, and for that public hearing, questions were asked by the local residents and answered by the development team. Levi did an amazing job on the whole process of this and making sure everything just followed step by step by step. So by the time they came to us, they were very well prepared. And, you know, I think that's going to, the Primrose School is going to be a nice addition to Galena should council approve that. Local business, I don't know if y'all noticed, but Santa Fermin sign is up. I went by the other day and the sign's up. So it looks like that they'll be opening kind of in that early March. I know that they're not just going to do a big blanket opening. They are going to do a soft opening. I just continue to say that our village remains strong. So continue to support local, and I think they all appreciate that greatly. I know under my report, I just talked about a big thank you going up to Cody Hill and Ted O'Shaughnessy. I actually put that out on Facebook and numerous social sites and got a lot of nice comments too, Jeff, so please pass that along. And I ran some hot chocolate out to Cody one of those very cold mornings and shared that with him, too, because I just think it's really important that they know how much they're appreciated. As you know, I spoke at Big Walnut's Rotary the morning of February 9th, which was delightful, and really looking forward to getting more involved in that organization as well. I also attended the Big Walnut Chamber Development Forum. That's the work that everyone's doing in the area, surrounding area, to discuss future development and goals and missions of the forum. So there's just been three meetings so far, and it's, you know, a huge group of people all in the area from Harlem, Trenton, Genoa, Berkshire, Sunbury, ourselves all talking, trying to find out, you know, how we can do shared services, what other people are doing that maybe somebody else wants to do. So it's been very beneficial, and I have to say it's probably quite beneficial for the village, because being that we are the smallest entity of that group that's on the call, we would benefit greatly from any shared services. So, you know, continue to create those relationships and explore what opportunities there may be. I also met with Troy Bollerson and Rick Carfagna to discuss the state capital funding for a walkway on the bridge coming into Galena for additional safety and eventual commerce. As, you know, the potential for development of Blackhawk, it's going to be really important to tie both the historic village and the new development together. And with our bridge having very little walkway, we want to make a safer path there. So we're starting, you know, I don't know if that's going to be anything that happens very quick, but it is something that I wanted to start the conversation on, and state capital funding is the way to do that. Troy is also going to have me sit down with Stephanie Tuzzi, who's been, I believe that she is going to be president of the Transportation Committee. So we'll just try to get as many people together on that, and Rick Carfagna is looking into some things and how we do track funding and all of that, just to sort of even get it, you know, as part of their conversation. I also had my second marriage. I can't believe it. So I married Brian Ferrance and Sarah Schroeder on Friday, January 29th in the Village Chamber, and that was just such a delight. They had such a great time. They had some more family with them. They had a little flower girl who walked her mom down the aisle, and right there in the village hall. So that it was really my honor to be able to do that for them.
They had quite a limo in the parking lot, too.
They did it for the girls, which was really sweet. The girls were so tired. So, yeah. So that's
Jill, on your topics, the planning and growing, something that had crossed my mind before, which is going to be going to council pretty soon. You know, there is a Primrose School right at Cleveland Avenue, just south of Polaris. I wonder if we could tour it, or whomever would be interested in going on a tour. Just a thought. Other item, Easter egg hunt. I know we all have our fingers crossed. Any comments? I don't even know the date, but it's like early April.
Yeah.
Any comments? Hey, Kathy, I talked to Jerry over at...
Oh, okay.
And I connected him with Sheila's email. He had some really good ideas on how to handle the Easter egg hunt by, like, limiting the number. People would sign up, and he would say, like, there's six kids from age, whatever, 6 to 10 at 11:30, and then six kids from 6 to 10 at 12. And he was going to run all that by Sheila. I know Sheila was out of town, so probably when Sheila gets back.
Okay. That's fantastic. Thank you.
April 30th.
Yeah. All right, that's fine. So there's something in the works. That's good to hear.
Yeah. Any other questions at all?
Jill, you were talking about a walkway on the bridge. It may be a crazy idea, but I just wanted to point out that there are some historic abutments at the end of Water Street that would make a lot of sense to reuse if you want to, you know, extend that walkway through there.
Dave, all crazy ideas are very welcome. So I was even talking to William Murdoch at Morphy, and they have some trusses, and he said, you know, gosh, if you guys could use our trusses in any ways for building materials, let us know. So just trying to really start the conversation and just see what it would even take and if it's possible. And Rick Carfani wanted to make sure that no future or within the next couple of years bridge projects were slated for that particular bridge. Any enhancements, improvements, strengthening. It's a pretty new bridge, so I don't think that's going to be the case. But he said, before we go tearing anything up, I just want to make sure there isn't any, you know, types of improvements being made on that. And as far as I know, we still don't know anything about the walkway, you know, which is unfortunate being that that is Columbus. And we just, you know, the water's down. Well, it's not down right now, but it was down. It would have been a great time to fix that. So we'll see who we might be able to nudge to see if we can get some time frame on that. All right. All right. If there's no more questions, Suzanne, would you like to share your fiscal officer report?
Sure. I just have some last-minute things that popped up. I wanted to let everybody know I got lots of complaints about the sewer bills. So when we print them off, they were clear. But apparently between when they were printed, get through the mail system, and got to people, the numbers were smudged. You couldn't read them. So Michelle and I went downstairs and dragged out the old printer and hooked up the old printer just to do sewer bills. So we shouldn't have any more problems with that. Then we had the email I sent out about the auditors. They wanted to know council's decision, and I literally just got that like Thursday or Friday. If we wanted to do the agreed upon procedures audit or the traditional audit, and the difference was, if you look in the budget, we have $7,500 budgeted for the audit, and the agreed upon procedures would bring that down to about $4,500. The difference is, when you look, and I sent out an example, when you look at the agreed upon procedures audit, it does not give opinions. So in a regular audit, it would say, in our opinion, this complied with all of necessary procedures. Or in our opinion, the checks and balances portion of it was done correctly. The procedures are correct. And that's about all I know. Like, when you look at the difference, there isn't a whole lot of difference other than the words, in our opinion. And it doesn't go into detail about procedures. Like, they would go through our manuals, and they would make sure everything was posted on our boards as far as different procedures that we do. They would look to make sure that we had written procedures for cashing checks, doing deposits, doing sewer payments and deposits and that kind of stuff. So,
which do you guys prefer, Suzanne? Which do you guys prefer? you had a full audit. Do you prefer doing just the procedure this year?
I would prefer the procedure just because it's less expensive.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And is it for 1 year or three?
It's 2 years.
2 years, okay. I got that. Thank you.
And Suzanne, as I read some of the notes on that, it appears as though we have to submit a request to the state auditor and get their blessing before we can move forward.
The auditors actually submit the request to the state auditor because I went through a series of questions with the auditor. Mm-hmm. And according to the series of questions, we met in the criteria because of our size. We're not, when you look at our budget, we met within the criteria for the state's criteria for the agreed upon procedures audit. So the auditors, and for those of you who don't know, the state was overwhelmed and could not do all of the audits. So they went through bidding procedures, and the BPMH is the company that won the bid to do our audit. So, and it's at a set price, $7,500 for the next 3 years. I think it's 3 years. So, that's how they got it, and then they contacted me and said,
I personally will support whatever you in the office believe is in our best interest.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, and Ken, maybe if you want to even weigh in on this, I wonder, are we giving up, what do we give up for that $3,000? Is it a matter of protections? Is it a matter of what, it's hard because what's unknown.
Right, the auditor's full audit is just that. And we normally have one every year. Because we have one every year, every 2 years, excuse me. This is a shortened version. You have full access to all of the economic data about receipts and expenditures yourselves. Comes in every, for every monthly meeting. So, yeah, I would say that I would live with the fiscal officer's recommendation. Saving $3,000 is not bad. And Suzanne, do you know whether or not if we elect to take this abbreviated audit now, are we locked into that?
No, we're not for the next one, no.
Okay, so then to answer your question, you may want to, if you're going to consider this abbreviated audit, go ahead and do it now, and then 2 years from now, go for the full audit. That's just a possibility. But no, I don't think you're giving anything up. What you're doing is you're having an abbreviated audit versus a full audit from A to Z. That's the difference.
Question. What happens if there's a discrepancy down the road and like the IRS does, they'll go back 7 years and the state audit says, okay, we got to go back and look at Galena again. We need to do a full audit, like a re-audit.
That's why we're going to ask them to approve it first.
Okay.
And that was I just saw the information on that here today too, or yesterday. And yes, we need to get approval from the state to do the abbreviated audit.
And that provides that protection then.
Yes, exactly. And it seems to me that.
Thank you. This is everything. Maybe.
If you want to do the complete audit, you can do it 2 years from now.
Yeah, so when I was looking at it, it looked like they would pull out, like, an example of 25 payroll checks, for example. Instead of looking at every single payroll check that we wrote, they would randomly pull out 25 payroll checks that we wrote and audit those for each year. If that makes sense.
They're cutting down on their, they have more than they can do, so they're cutting down on it by, by skipping over the little guys, it sounds like. So we can take advantage of that and save a few $1,000s. I can't see a problem with it. I don't know if anyone else can.
Especially since your financial records are so easily available.
I agree with Kathy. I don't see a downside.
Go ahead.
Just for clarity, and I apologize, my internet is being real special, so it's breaking in and out. So my question is regarding the abbreviated audit, I guess for lack of a better term, what is the difference between the two, and why would we choose to do the short version, if you will? Is it because of the expense of it? What have we done in the past? Just curious. And you may have said this, but everybody felt like Charlie Barr's teacher. So just for clarity, help me out.
The auditors actually came to me and asked if we wanted to do this because of our size. The state came up with these guidelines, and I answered a bunch of questions, and we went through our financials. And according to the questions that I answered, we would qualify for this agreed-upon procedures audit.
Okay.
The state still has to approve that. The agreed-upon procedures audit is a mini version of a regular audit. So when I look through it, it says they pull out a random 25 of this and 30 examples of that instead of looking at every single transaction that we do. They just randomly pull out transactions. The other part is that we don't go through our policies and procedures and say, this is, so like our written check cashing policy or our written check writing procedure, they don't double check that. They don't double check our checks and balances as far as Michelle does some things and I do other things. So that there's a checks and balances, they don't double check that. That was all done in the audit that was done 2 years ago. And we haven't changed anything.
Our procedures.
Yeah, that the procedures haven't changed in the last 2 years.
I'm satisfied. I don't
see a downside. Honestly, and we're saving $3,000, so.
We need a motion to do that, and I'm looking through all my notes here to make sure I have covered everything. If we want to do the motion, that would be good, and then I'll cover the the peddler's permit, which was something else that I looked into this month.
So what's the proper name for that? Because it was a motion to approve.
The motion to approve the agreed upon procedures audit.
Okay. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Mike. A second. And Ruben with a second. You want to do a roll call vote on this, or you want to do all in favor?
Yes. Okay.
I can do a roll call. Okay. David?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Ruben?
Yes.
Mike? Todd?
Yes.
And Eric?
Yes.
Motion is passed and been approved with agreed upon procedures audit.
The other thing that I spent some time looking into is I have gotten several phone calls from different businesses wanting to do door-to-door sales. And I said, during COVID, we're not doing any kind of door-to-door sales. They wanted to know if we had a permit, if there was any cost involved. So they were asking us questions, and we really don't have anything in place for that. So I looked into it for, a couple of the area ones. It would be a peddler's permit. It is covered under the Ohio Revised Code. I believe it was one section 112. Section 1, chapter 112 of the Ohio Revised Code. And if you want me to go into it further and to write up something, we can do like an ordinance which would set a fee for people to come into the village. It would restrict the hours. The ordinance would also give the time period in which people, they would get like a 30-day permit, a 15-day permit, and it would set so that they would have to wear credentials and say, that would say, Galena has processed a permit and we are allowed to go door to door during these times. So that's just something to think about.
Right. The last time that I looked into this, which was not yesterday, door to door presentations, let's get step away for a minute from sales and talk about religion. I think it's called proselytizing. Restricting that is a legitimate government purpose, but only to the extent of knowing who's there, so there's some sort of registration with the community and some sort of ID, as Suzanne has just indicated, indicating they have approval from the government. This is probably covered. I do not have it with me, but this is probably additionally covered in the standard ordinances that we adopt, that we did actually in January of this year. So I'll be happy to put something together and get it to you for your next meeting. It is true that COVID creates an additional wrinkle that no one ever thought about when all this legislation was created. And we'll have to see whether or not there's any case law or statutory modifications by the State House modifying things because of COVID. Because in my mind's eye, if I want to enlighten you about my religion and I go door to door, that's fine, except that given the risk of the virus, maybe that isn't as fine as it used to be. And we need to see to what extent we can regulate that. I can't answer that question tonight, but I'll be happy to look into it.
I saw on several, like the Delaware site and Sunbury site, that they did an ordinance suspending peddler's permits due to COVID.
That's what I'm thinking too, right?
Are they two separate things? Is the commerce, if someone's selling something or if someone's just going door to door, I think proselytizing is what you use as far as what we call it. What are those two separate things? Because if I get a peddler's permit, I thought is to sell something, you know, from Girl Scout cookies to candy bars to aluminum siding. Versus, hey, when the Jehovah's Witnesses come check it out, they got a different permit.
They're both freedom of speech issues, and generally are regulated as a unit. But I would agree that for both of those instances, the COVID creates a significantly different wrinkle, and we may want to regulate that to the extent we're able to. Or prohibit it, one or the other. I mean, it's
sure.
During the period of COVID, until the governor declares that the crisis is over, this is what the law is. So,
well,
I think they're both, I look at them as both being similar. Yeah, Dave?
Yeah, it seems to me that it's something worth investigating, getting the facts of what we can do and what we can't do.
Sure.
But the other thing that I remember seeing signs, and it sticks in my mind that there were signs like this in Galena that made reference to a Green River ordinance.
Yes, back in the, at the dawn of creation, yes, that was a while ago.
I remember seeing those signs in Galena.
Yeah, and there's the Green River case is a really old case that prohibited door-to-door
solicitation, basically.
Okay.
And you could put a sign up or not put a sign up. No sign, therefore you encouraged it. If there was a sign, you prohibited it.
So okay. was there a limit on that? I mean, was there a statute that was created that's no longer valid?
Yeah, the Green River Ordinance, that was a case. It was a legal case. I don't forget where Green River is. But there was a case that said that you basically, you could do that, and that has been modified since.
Okay.
So, but the COVID modifies it further. We just haven't done it.
So, I'll
do something.
And I think a little bit of guidance, too, as far as the intent. Like, is this a thing that we want? Is this a thing that we want in the village? And if it's not, there are probably other ways to move away from it. For example, if you have a permit and it costs more money than people are willing to spend to get the permit, to do the door-to-door, you know, there are probably ways to squeeze it a little bit and keep it from happening. If that is our goal as a village council.
As I say, I'll put together a report. I think the procedure that you just outlined, I think that's been done before also. And I believe there's some case law that says a reasonable registration fee to perhaps do a background check or things along that line is fine. But, you know, $1,000 a day to go door-to-door in Galena is probably not fine. So, as I say, I'll look into that and be happy to give you a report at the next meeting and factor in COVID, too. So,
thank you.
All of them said, all the ordinances that I looked at all said that if you have a sign that says no soliciting, it doesn't matter if they have a permit or not. They're not allowed to come on your property.
That's interesting. Thank you. All right. Well, so Ken, we'll look forward to you putting something together for us for the next meeting.
Sure.
All right. Any other questions about that? All right, so we'll move on to the payment of invoices for February. I wondered if there were any questions regarding that.
I can make a motion to approve the financial state or the invoices for February. Everything was perfectly defined today.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Eric. One second. Roll call vote.
Hayden?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Ruben?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
And Eric?
Yes.
Okay, the motion has passed to have been approved to pay the invoices for February. All right. Any questions regarding the approval of the financial statements or any comments?
I'll make a motion to approve the financial statements as well for February.
Perfect.
Kathy and Ruben, thank you. And we'll call vote.
Okay. Todd?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Ruben?
Steve.
Kathy and David?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Give a motion of pass to approve the financial statement. Moving on to code compliance and water treatment reports. Are there any questions from the reports that were in your package? Anything Jeff might be able to answer for you?
Where is the Sweet Run Court or Circle? I guess it would be.
I don't know.
Is that in the new section?
It's permits. There's multiple permits and new bills on Sweet Run.
Oh, that I think it's retreat at Dustin.
Yeah, that's at the retreat.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
All right. Well, I will move into reading the ordinances. Ordinance number 2020-10, third reading as an emergency. We tabled and told this particular meeting on 2/22/21, an ordinance regulating the use or occupation of all public rights of way in the Village of Galena, the issuance of right-of-way permits to persons for such use or occupancy, and to set forth the policies of the Village related to its public rights of way and declaring an emergency. for this particular one, we decided to table again until March 17th. Is that correct?
The right away, yes, because we just got the comments, I think.
Yes. Okay. So we need a motion for that one.
That's what I thought. Okay. So a motion to table until March 17th.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, David. Second?
Jill, on that date, it would actually be March 22nd. That's the Monday meeting, not the...
Thank you. That's exactly what I did. You read my mind.
Okay.
Thank you, Todd. You want to do a roll call vote?
I can. Eric?
Yes.
Ike?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Ruben?
Yes.
David?
Yes.
Yes. The motion has passed to table the ordinance number 2020-10 until the March 22nd meeting. All right, ordinance number 2020-16, third reading, again tabled until the 222 this meeting, and ordinance conditionally accepting the public improvements at the Arrowhead Lake Estate, section 1 and 2. Implementing the maintenance period and bond, releasing the performance bond, all in accordance with the development agreement. Can I get a motion to table this until the March 22nd meeting?
I will make that motion.
All right, Kathy and Mike, thank you. And roll call vote, please.
David?
Yes.
Ruben?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
And Eric?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion is passed. Ordinance number 2020-16 to table that until our March 22nd meeting. Ordinance number 2021-03, second reading, is an emergency. And ordinance regulating the payment of past due developer fees, providing for the time of payment, providing for late charges, and declaring an emergency. And that is just the second reading. Any questions or conversations around that at all? Okay.
I do have a question.
Sure, Dan.
Suzanne, is there any reason to do this, to pass this tonight?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to raise that issue.
Thank you, David. All right. Any other business? This might be a nice opportunity. I received a text from someone in the community regarding the Berkshire meeting this evening. If Mary, if you'd like to say a few words about that.
Sure. Just to update people so that you're aware, there is a major some zoning coming up in Berkshire Township that affects anybody that pretty much is around the freeway. They're talking about putting in 300-plus apartments over there, and that's just one of many possible developments going in. But anybody that wants to take a look at it, it is on the Berkshire zoning webpage. So, or feel free to contact anybody in Berkshire. Or obviously, I know some about it, too. But it will be affecting all of us in multiple ways.
And can I ask who's speaking, and can I get your address?
Oh, sure. It's Mary Howard, 1765 South Galena.
Thank you.
Mary, do you know offhand what the date is of that Berkshire zoning meeting?
I do. It is March 4th. It's Thursday, March 4th. 7 p.m. It will be a Zoom meeting. It'll be a first. Berkshire's been meeting in person. This will be a first ever Zoom meeting for Berkshire.
Mary, what's the website for Berkshire where to find this? Are they at .org or .gov?
.org. BerkshireTownship.org.
.org, okay.
And it's right under zoning. You'll find it. I think it's about 50 pages of information about this.
Okay, thank you. And were you able to see who the developer is on that?
I did. Dublin partnerships or something. I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
Okay, no problem. You know the density or anything like that, Mary? You said, what is it? Did you say 300?
It's like 10.92 per acre or something. It's some pretty serious apartments that they're going to pack in there. And I believe they're going for a federal grant, so they won't have any property taxes, so the services will become somehow part of the STNG, but I'm not 100%. It will be part of Berkshire. It's all part of Berkshire, but somehow I don't know all the details, but I do believe we will have extra funding that residents need to pay in there.
And this is real, then she knows it'll be, I would assume not, the low-income apartment housing, and is it that and the traffic concern at that 36-37-71 intersection?
I believe those are all concerns for that.
Okay. And Mary, are those 1, 2, 3, 4, I mean, how big are the apartments? Do we know? Have you heard of any? I don't know how much
they
are detail
it gives. They are 2 and 3 bedroom apartments, ranging, I believe, in square footage from 900 to 1,100 square feet. They will be Olin Tangy schools, I believe, possibly, you know, about 600 students into the Olin Tangy school system.
What I know, Mary, from looking at it vaguely, but checking because of zoning and what we're doing and all of that, of the 296, 192 will be 3 bedrooms. So I think the impact on the school system may be more than they're thinking.
I do believe it to be pretty significant.
Oh. Is this something that is happening this year, 6 months, 3 years, 2 years?
I believe they wanted it to happen yesterday. That's in any typical zoning thing. The developers wanted it fast.
Okay.
I know.
And this is in a FEMA district, so the trustees do not have any say in it. It only goes through zoning.
And I would say the half hour that I looked at the documents, they are intricate. They are involved. These guys are ready right now. It's not preliminary. It is detailed. Give a moment and go out to that site and take a look.
Is this a done deal, or is there opportunity to, I don't know, get pushback or have the concerns voiced to zoning?
I don't know. I'm only basing it on my impression once I looked at the documents. Mm-hmm. So it's like, whoa, they have worked on this for quite some time. But this is the first that it's been brought to Berkshire. This will be the first meeting.
Yeah, the first meeting will be this March 4th meeting. And I do believe the developer will be doing the presentation at that meeting. Usually the developer does the presentation, and then it goes to board questioning and then to public participation. I would expect quite a bit of public participation, but I know they are planning to limit the time of this meeting to and it's not official yet, but I do think they're trying to keep it down to, you know, a couple hours. So I'm praying there's more than one meeting. But, you know, you guys go through meetings, so if there's a motion and a second, then it's a done deal. But there's a lot to go through.
And does this sit right behind the outlet, kind of, you know, like you drive down the road to go to the outlets and there's all that field?
No, it's over on the other side. It's kind of behind the White Castle, the Panera, that section.
Yeah.
Cracker Barrel, all of there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's at 3B's and K, mm-hmm. and 36, 37, just south of that, from what I've Googled.
Yeah.
The developer?
I'm not recalling it off the top of my head. Dublin Partnerships, I believe. I see like 3 or 4 different names. I do not have the application in front of me. Yeah, I'm sorry. There is extensive information. All of the paperwork is on the Berkshire website.
because it's like 50 pages. They declined to be able to get that out to everybody that was interested. Instead, you can print it yourself, they said.
Mm-hmm.
Harry? You can make appointments to go in and talk to David and people in the Berkshire offices if there are questions or you want to see the actual documents, is what I was told. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate it. All right. Regarding Delaware County Regional Planning Commission, report of meeting is on the 25th. Last month's meeting tends to be, you know, just some new smaller housing developments, maybe, you know, 3-4 housing developments. Sometimes it has to do a little bit with, you know, where a road's going to go, you know, back to a particular area or an easement. So nothing, you know, within our area or anything happening at this time on that. Regarding the Morpsey report, I kind of incorporated into my mayor's report there in the beginning, talked a lot about COVID. Morpsey's doing an amazing job just keeping everybody abreast on what's going on with COVID, what the governor's saying, and, you know, a lot of times we're on the meeting and the governor's speaking and where they send stuff right back out. So really staying up to date on all of that. There is a grant workshop, I believe, on the 25th as well. It's like just from 11 to 11:30, and it's just Morpsey's way of helping some people learn their grant system. You know, I get grants each probably once a month that they send out, and always kind of peruse through those, see if there's anything interesting for the village. If anybody wants those on a regular basis, I'm happy to send those over or get you on the mailing list from Morpsey to receive those, because I know Kathy Gallison and myself, we all went through the grant writing workshop, you know, keeping things alive on trying to find some new grants for this next year.
And if I can just jump in right there real quick. So as far as grants, and we talked about playgrounds, that type of thing. I just want, Eric, I think you were heading up the playgrounds. I got this big old book in the mail today. I guess I had made some application online to get their catalog.
Good.
Yes. About, it is beautiful. It's got everything, so I want to make sure I get it to you.
Yes, please. Please do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's David and Eric. And, you know, I think it kind of brings to light, too, just, you know, we've all signed up for a lot of committees and a lot of things, and there's some things that are happening, some things that aren't happening. Obviously, finance committee's got a lot going on right now, you know, and coming up. But let's all really start diving in and thinking about these committees, whether you need to get the public involved. You know, I'm thinking for myself, get on social media, try to recruit people for my beautification committee, because it's, you know, we're right around the corner from needing to pick out plants and having an idea of what that's going to look like for the village and what other areas that we can work on. So I know I've got some work ahead of me, but let's not, you know, get too far away from, you know, the things that we've all signed up for. All right, Ruben, for BSTNG, you got any report for us?
Hey, this is a lot.
Oh, there he goes.
We lost you, Ruben. I'll speak for him. There you go. He was out of town and didn't get to attend the meeting. How's that?
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Okay.
Well, he nice spoke. That's all.
Okay. Well, if there's anything new, feel free to send out an email. All right. Kathy, I always tell you, Senator of Planning and Zoning Commission, anything that I missed that you want to add?
Nope. I went through my notes and you had covered them, that we did have the hearing, that it is open. Ken has some takeaways. We left the hearing open for the 3/17 meeting, and documents are available for the public. So, repeat of what you have there.
Awesome. Okay. Always good to have my extra set of eyes and ears. Any other commission reports? Anybody working on anything right now that they want to bring forward? For having ideas about getting things set up in the next couple of weeks. Okay.
So we'll wait till next month because there'll be more information about
it. Okay.
Hey guys,
well, it's our summer. It's what we're doing in the summer and how we're doing it as far as, you know, festivals, events, and things like that. And I think that bridging the gap between being socially distant, it's hard. It's like trying to throw darts at something that, and they keep moving the board. So I'm hoping by then we have some restrictions, at least released to the point that we can come out and gather and you know, masks or not, or hopefully we can still get together. So that's where we're headed. We're being cautious and cautiously optimistic is how I would describe it.
Yeah. Hey, Ruben, I gave your update. I said you were out of town.
My internet is really giving me a pain in the, neck. Did you guys hear what I said?
Not a word.
Stop. So, we want Chief to come next month to give an annual report to everyone and open the door for questions. That's it.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Yeah, set that up with Suzanne. That'd be great.
Cool.
Is there any guest participation? I didn't really cover that earlier. I'm sorry, we covered that with our friends who spoke to us tonight. But anybody out in the community on the call this evening that have any comments, anything that they want to expand on or add to? All right, my friends. Well, sounds good. No executive session this evening. So may I get a motion to adjourn our meeting this evening?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, David. In a second.
I'll second.
Okay, Eric, Kathy, call me about
it. Either way.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right. The meeting has adjourned at, what time is it? 9:13. Thank you. 9:13. Went away on my computer. All right. Well, great. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a fantastic week. Stay warm. There's a lot going on, so let's get it going.
Have a great week.
Thank you. You guys too. Take care.